Caskey hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Raiders make the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Reiner to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, football with a big road win. Volleyball playing a couple of huge matches on the road. And we'll catch you up on everything else that's going on in the world of A-State sports. It's also Hall of Honor week this week. Excited about Friday night, the induction ceremony. We'll see the four inductees go in. We talked with one of them last week, with J.D. McKissick. Really enjoyed our visit with him. But another one of the inductees is our very special guest today, one of the greatest pitchers in A-State history, the all-time strikeout king, program leader in starts and innings pitched, also second in school history and career wins. He was the 2012 Sun Belt Conference Pitcher of the Year. That season he finished 9-1, by the way, which was the highest winning percentage in school history. Welcome in, Jacob Lee. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you here. We were a little surprised, and I like Bobo's reaction when he walked in the studio just a minute ago, because we didn't know that we'd be able to do this in person. You're living in Los Angeles now, but you're here for the whole week, so this is pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm glad you gave me that option. I was just down the street seeing my dad while I'm here for the week, and I wanted to come in. It's been a while since we've gotten to catch up and see you guys in person, so this is perfect.
Yeah, it's a great surprise. All right, so I'm going to ask.
Yeah, let's
just
get
before
into
we
it.
Get. I'm going to get out of order, but I don't want to forget this because I think I know how you guys are wired. You mentioned highest win percentage, you know, was when you went 9-1 in 2012, you're the pitcher of the year. So I don't want to hear about the 9. Tell me about the 1, because I know you probably remember more about it.
Well, to be honest, I was – I don't know if I do, but you might.
No, I don't. I mean, I'm glad you don't.
That season – I remember a lot of things about that season.
Man, that's a negative start.
No. No, he's
really,
right.
I was speaking to the mindset
you
of these guys.
You do usually remember
they
that
hung
one.
Up, they hang up on that stuff. So yeah. I'm thrilled that he doesn't – that he can't tell me who it was against, kind of the hit that got him behind, all that crap. I'm glad he doesn't know.
You're exactly right. That mind frame of, you know, you remember your losses or misses more than your wins. And a lot. It's absolutely true. I don't know. I guess it's been a few years. So I maybe just put it in the back.
Statute of limitations is up.
I do remember some really good things about that season, and I do remember how we finished the regular season down in Little Rock, winning the series and keeping them out of the tournament.
That was nice. You know, we went on a run there against Little Rock where, gosh, how many games did we win in a row?
10.
10, but it was like 19 out of 21 or something crazy.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah, I remember. I was looking back through it leading up to this week, and yeah, I think the Sunday game I think put us at 10 or 11, maybe 12 in a row. But that one, I think, it was their first series they had lost at home all season, and it was the one that ultimately they finished outside the top 8 to go to the tournament.
And it's still this way. But what's always cool when we go to Little Rock, we always have more fans at Gary Hogan Field than they do. And really, it's not even close.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's definitely a rivalry. It's definitely something we always mark on the schedule, think about and talk about days and weeks in advance, because you know it's going to be tough. It doesn't matter where you are in the standings or where they are. It's going to be tough.
We still got them on the schedule.
Yeah, so you know they're not in the league anymore.
But they're not in the league anymore.
Yeah, that's okay. It's still one of those things.
They got the boot for not playing football.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. The conference reshuffling and national reshuffling of all that, you know, you could talk about that forever.
So what was your reaction when you found out you were going into the Hall of Honor?
A lot of emotion that I didn't really know. It's never one of those things you start your career out thinking about, or your preparation for the season. You know, hey, I want to get to this Hall of Honor. I want to be in there. It was a lot of emotion when Todd Baumgartner called me and told me. I was incredibly humbled and honored to get that call from him too. It's just so special. Somebody I played with, someone I still talk to a lot to this day. And so that was really special to me. But yeah, it's not something I necessarily ever set out to accomplish, but feel incredibly lucky and fortunate to have had the career I had and ultimately be inducted.
So you said that your reaction to it surprised you?
Yeah, it did. Because again, I just wasn't something that what I did on the field was important to me. What my teammates meant to me was important to me. What those coaches meant to me was important to me. And this is important to me, but it wasn't something that I was, you know, necessarily keeping tabs on or anything, or had to have, you know, some sort of notch on my belt. I was, like I said, just thrilled to have the success that we did as a team, that we did as a program, and where we finished. It was important to me that we left the program in a better place than it was when we came in there, because it was not fun when we first got there. We did not win a lot of games, and it was tough. And the offseason was tougher. And we kind of leaned into that, turned it around, got some of the right guys in. And before you knew it, my sophomore year, a series down in Lafayette is one that I remember a lot. Weren't really expected to do much by the conference, weren't really expected to do much down there in Lafayette. And to come out of there with a win on Sunday was really, felt like a little bit of a turning of the tide for me.
Kind of want to go back a little bit here, but you're a Jonesboro guy. You grew up here and played on some great teams at Jonesboro High School. Did you always know that you were going to go to Arkansas State? Was that kind of at the top of your list? Did you have other options?
There were some other options, but no, I did not always want to go. It was actually a pitching coach on Keith Kessinger's staff before Justin Message. He was the pitching coach. His name escapes me right now. He later went to Sam Houston State.
Barry?
Yes, that's okay. It. I was playing at ASU in a summer tournament, I think my junior or sophomore year. And he was like, hey, don't write us off just because we're home and just because we're local here. You know, this is a good program. We've got some guys and you'd fit in well. So don't write us off just because, you know, we're here. And so I appreciated that from him. He was a guy that I, you know, valued his opinion. So I appreciated that from him. And so, you know, junior year came around. I got to a place where it made sense for me and Coach Kessinger and his staff that he was putting together there. And then I was just incredibly lucky that Tommy Raffo ended up being the head coach by the time I landed on campus. But, you know, ultimately a decision that I, you know, I'm incredibly lucky to have had played out and fortunate to have had an opportunity to play here.
You mentioned Coach Kessinger and his staff. They were the ones to recruit you, but you played all 4 years under Tommy Raffo. So do you remember what that first conversation was like?
I do. It was a pretty quick phone call, I think. But then I went to his press conference in the clubhouse when he got the job. I think I was one of the only guys there because I was a local. I went in there and shook his hand.
I remember that press conference.
Yeah, it was a little tight quarters in there. And I was like, man, this guy's in a pinstripe suit. He's kind of, he's talking about all this change. I'm like, oh, man, all right, well, I guess we'll see. No, it was great. I mean, you could tell from the moment he got here, he had a vision of what he wanted to do, how he was going to do it. And I made sure that my name was on the list that got to be part of that. Because again, it, you know, the first year, it was a lot of guys hanging around from Kessinger's time here. And some of them were great, great players, great contributors. Derek Coleman, who I played in high school with, Chase Ware, phenomenal Friday night guy. You know, we had some really, you know, Brandon Eller from Little Rock too. We had some great guys on that team, but there were some guys there that favored the previous staff, and that's okay. But we did a lot of running that year that they were maybe not as much fans of, and so it was a little bit of a different roster the next year.
So he asked about the options, or even did you grow up wanting to come here? Because I mean, romantically, like, we want every kid that grows up in Northeast, I don't care if you're an athlete, no, kids growing up wanting to come to Arkansas State. But you also know too that there, and there's nothing wrong with this, that there are young people that it's important to them to go somewhere else, see a different place. I mean, did you have to weigh any of that stuff out?
I mean, to a degree, but I'll tell you, I did go to I had a couple of junior colleges that wanted me to come play and play both ways, play a position and pitch. And it only took one or two of those trips to a one stoplight town to figure out really quick that was maybe not what I wanted so much, and that I wanted a full college experience. So my parents were very supportive in that, and they said, hey, look, you're not going to be coming home and doing your laundry on the weekends. You're not going to be coming to dinners and stuff. And that was part of it. You know, go live on campus, go be on campus, go to school. I loved that. I came home and certainly we would see my family, you know, more often than those that went away. But I was not, you know, kind of splitting time between home and campus. I was full on campus, and I lived on campus all 4 years. You know, one of my roommates all 4 years I lived there, or three out of the 4 years, lived with him. He's from Jonesboro too. So we kind of leaned into that and really enjoyed that campus experience.
Well, and I'm sure it helped that you had some of your high school teammates on the team. You mentioned Derek Coleman, but Murray Watts also a part of those great JHS teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, he was in that same kind of mindset that I was, like, hey, we're away at school, we're going to college, we're fully into the program, you know, in baseball and academics. And so, you know, we were not kind of splitting time between home and campus, which I think is really important. And I think it's important for those that are locals to see those people, see athletes, see students, but, you know, the athletes we're talking about going to ASU, having success and getting playing time and really contributing, you know, that's part of it. You know, and if just because you're not from a big school city or something like that, you know, there's plenty of kids that grow up in Tuscaloosa or Knoxville and want to stay there. I'm not going to say the other school on the other side of the state, but you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. How old were you the first time you met Murray Watts?
14 or 15.
Oh, okay. So out of there, yeah.
Out of the baseball field, and you guys knew him. He was, what, 6'3"?
So say, was like I mean, yes, I was going to guess what he was based on the age.
I don't think I faced him when we were younger until we were on the same high school team, and Murray was great at gut checking me early and making sure that I could contribute as a freshman on our team in high school. Couldn't have ended up where I did even at ASU without him, because he was instrumental in my development at JHS as well and the coaches there. But Murray was great. I leaned on him. We would – this carried on to when we were at ASU together, but we were always probably the last ones in the cage, last ones at the practice field, and we loved that. We would spend way more time together outside of the field, outside of practice hours, even in college. I mean, we used to sneak onto the football field and run bleachers in the off season together. We just loved working out together. We worked out together in the off season in high school and later in college. He was a great friend and contributor, and couldn't have done it without him.
Well, you had a couple of pitching coaches, right? You had Justin Message and Ty Dickinson.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
What'd you learn from those guys?
Justin
Message. Two different personalities.
Two very different personalities. Both great pitching coaches, very knowledgeable, different philosophies on how to pitch and get things done on the mound. Justin Message had a little bit more of a old school mentality on how to, you know, work the mound and work hitters. And I really liked that about it. But he was a big hard work guy, and he loved competition off the mound amongst his staff. I don't think we ever ran anything just for running. It was always timed, or it was a race. You know, there was a winner, there was a loser. I love that about him. You know, I needed that right when I got there too, and we needed that as a staff. Ty Dickinson had a different approach because, you know, he was a West Coast guy, had some real success with, you know, Tim Lincecum, Nick Hagedone, some other guys that really made it to the big leagues very quickly. So he was great in that aspect of what it took to get to the next level as well. And one of the things I remember from him a lot was like, hey, stick with your best pitch. Don't ever get beat on your third or fourth best pitch. Get beat on your best pitch if you're going to get beat. And so I took countless things away from both of them.
There were some good teams that you played on, and that was really a fun time in A-State baseball, because when you started playing, that began a stretch where we went 8 straight years where we won multiple games in the tournament, and no team in Sun Belt history can say that except Arkansas State, which is pretty phenomenal considering kind of the playing field they were on. I guess the best year was your senior season. That year the team went 34-23. That was the season you won Sun Belt Conference Pitcher of the Year, and man, we sniffed it, didn't we? We were 5 outs away from winning a conference championship. I don't want to dwell on that part, but that season in particular, that was a fun ride.
Was that the one? No, the 9-1 was the regular season. But I remember that game almost. It feels like
did you
out
start
by
that
out.
Game?
I did. I threw 6 or 7 that game. I think 7, but it was.
We were up in the 8th inning. It was 2-1 with 1 out in the 8th.
Oh, so you were good.
We'd played 8 innings of really good baseball. 1 1/3, I think, of less good baseball. But I remember the first hitter of the game hit a home run. Their dugout went nuts. Their parents went nuts. And I was like, we might be in for a dogfight here today. And we answered with one right back in the bottom of the first. And it was a heavyweight match, it felt like. They had 2 guys in the middle of their lineup, 2 big right-handed hitters that went on to play pro ball that were very, very talented. We basically talked about in the pregame strategy, hey, get everyone out in front of them. So if they hit one over the fence, it's only one. And I got into a situation my second time through the lineup where they had some guys on in front of them. And, you know, we had to tighten our belt a little bit and punch them both out to keep them off the run column for that inning. But it was tough. It was a lot of fun to be in that game. I think that was as much as we had pressed as a team that season. That team was great in a lot of ways, but that team was great because we had some guys that did really well when when you didn't have to push the gas on them, when they could play free and loose and, you know, just be themselves. We had a lot of guys that were really good at that year. And, you know, all of a sudden the nuts and bolts get a little tighter. Everybody gets a little bit, you know, on their toes, and it's the game of the year. You know, there's no more outs after this if we don't win. And so it, you know, that pressure, you could feel it in the dugout a little bit, and it was hard to figure out, you know, what do we say? Do we try to push the gas? Do we try to pump the brake? Because that's always the give and take in the dugout when you're in those dogfights. How do we manage the temperature in here? And I think that just ended up being the case. They had some guys and they could rely on there at the end, and it was a really good game.
It's interesting. Mentally, I guess for you, you did not approach that game going in, or for that matter coming out of it, thinking it was your last college game, because you didn't want to be, and it was only going to be if you didn't win it.
No, that's the athlete mentality, right? Like, you know, we're going to win this game, but you're one out at a time, one pitch at a time. Then it sets in after that last out is called. But I didn't know that. I was really proud to be there with those guys and that team and that staff, that we had won a lot of games that year, and we fought hard in that game. It was tough to end it the way it did, but I think anyone would tell you those were the two best teams in the conference that year. Those were some of the best players in that conference on, you know, in that year, but also for years to come after that. Some younger guys that ended up being pretty good.
You had set the career strikeout record at FAU that year, right? That was the same series that FAU didn't put the tarp on the field. Mm. And they ended up canceling one of the games, and they ended up winning the conference by a half game. Mm-hmm. And there were some hard feelings about that afterwards, and for good reason.
Yeah, you know, there's home field advantages everywhere. There's home field advantages here. There's home field advantages there.
There's a perfectly good tarp sitting over there.
There it was. Maybe there were some. Maybe the field crew had the day off that day. Who knows? But I do remember that we had a similar situation on the Saturday when we picked back up. We were in like the fifth or sixth inning. I was approaching 100-ish pitches or so for the day, and rain came through. Their starter went out, and I said, "I am not coming out of this game. I will stay loose." And I think I surprised them a little bit, because they had the top of their lineup turning over, and they just so happened to not, you know, we had a little rain delay or whatever, and all of a sudden it's 20 minutes, and then it's 30, and then it's like 45. I said, I told Ty, I was like, don't come down here. I'm staying loose. Like, I'm not going anywhere. And so I went back out there. We, I think, went 1-2-3 that next inning, and ultimately I think came out of there feeling like we knew, hey, if we see you guys again, we'll have a little extra for you. But neutral playing field, you don't have the edge you think you do.
Again, I'm going to bounce around a little bit, but you mentioned the home field, and I don't know if you've been by your home field yet, but What do you think? You look out there, and it's just solid rock at the moment.
I'm excited to see, you know, what comes from it. It's exciting that there are, you know, updates going in. You know, there's a lot of that has been around since I was going to camps there as a young baseball player. But it's great. ASU, Matt and I were talking this before, ASU's ready, and the town of Jonesboro is excited to support a baseball program and support that. Not that they haven't been, but if you've got seats out there, you can fill them, and putting some wins up doesn't hurt, and it'll be great. I think a lot of people are excited about it. I know that there are other teams in the conference now that have a lot of great facilities, and we have a great home field advantage here. I love pitching at home on Friday nights because the wind blew right down my back from center field to home plate. It said 400 on center field fence, but that thing played like 500 or 600 feet on Friday nights when it was dark. So I love pitching there.
Yeah, it's always been a pitcher's park, and I know you appreciated that when you left Arkansas State. Did spend a handful of years playing professional baseball. So tell us about that experience.
It was great getting to be part of the Cleveland organization starting in 2012-ish, 2013, when they were ultimately went up, you know, to the World Series in 16. Was really cool to see that organization take a turn very similar to what, you know, Arkansas State had done, because Terry Francona came in right when I also joined the organization, obviously him in the big leagues and me in the minor leagues. But it was very different. I'm told that next spring training when he took over and where the direction went from there, there were a lot of people from the outside coming in to study kind of what he was doing leading up to 2016 and afterwards, because, you know, there was something special in that culture and in that organization that they were putting together. And I think that's still there today. And I think that's something that they value. You know, what we do within our walls here, within our doors and within our organization is really important to us. And, you know, there's a secret sauce in there that they want to cultivate. And they want that from, like I said, the big leagues down to the minor leagues. And so I was very fortunate to be part of that too.
You know, they always say, and you had heard it a lot of times when you were too young, I didn't care, but it stops for everybody. So tell me about that point for you, how you got to that point where you said the baseball part is done.
I can tell you exactly where it was. I was in Erie, Pennsylvania, pitching against their double-A team in a game that did not matter at the end of the season. I had come back from Tommy John, and I was pitching. We were down by a lot in the seventh or eighth inning. I was throwing the last three to kind of finish the game and save some arms for the next day. I was actually pitching against a former Razorback, Dominic Ficicello, who played there. He was with Detroit at the time. We were down. He was up in the count 3-0, and it did not register with me at all, but he had just taken a big swing on a 3-0 pitch. Oh, I threw a 3-0 pitch. I think it was a two-seam down and in, and he took a big swing to try to hit a home run across the street. And it did not even register with me. But the next one is supposed to go in the ribs to send a message for the rest of the series. And I know that. I know that 8 days a week. But in that moment, in that game, on that mound, I was not thinking about that. I was thinking about where my arm was, where my shoulder was coming back from an injury. And it just did not register with me. And I came in, I finished the inning, came into the dugout, and the manager and the pitching coach both went up one side of my back, came down the other, ripped me a new one everywhere I had it. And I sat there for a few minutes. I sat there in my hotel room later that night. I was like, I wasn't even thinking about that. And came home that off season. Normally I would take about 10 days to before I started prepping for the next season. And it all of a sudden it was like 3 weeks. And I was like, I went to lunch with Coach Raffo and I was like, what do you think that means? He was like, well, I think we both know what that means. So it's okay.
That's pretty awesome though. I mean, like, we could do a whole deep dive into that mentality about the part that you knew or you should have known you were supposed to drill that guy.
Yeah.
Murray had a similar moment. He knew the moment, talking about Murray Watts, when he was done. So, yeah, I think that is interesting.
Yeah, someone phrased it to me one time. It was like, you know, either the game tells you or your body tells you. And I think it was a little bit of both there. But I just, it didn't register. And I was totally at peace with that decision. I still am today. Baseball has been great to me. I'm excited when the opportunity comes to me to give back to the sport, whether that's with lessons or coaching or, like, you know, my kids one day or something. But, no, baseball has been great to me. I was fortunate to play as long as I did.
You know, and you met your wife in the minors, right?
That is kind of how I met her. It is. And so that's all. It's been a blessing. You know, and the Tommy John thing is part of it, right? It's at my stage of where I was like 26, I think, at the time. I'd played a couple of years in AA at that point. I could have probably used it a couple of years before that, to be honest with you. My elbow was not great at that time, but it was a blessing. I really enjoyed it.
So we kind of referenced it earlier. You're living in Los Angeles now. So tell us about what you're up to.
Yeah, so I met my wife. I was living in Phoenix, followed her out there after I hung it up. And it's been great. Working real estate out there, beautiful weather, beaches are great, those sorts of things. It's a baseball town like we were talking about. So that's fun. I keep that. Talking about baseball in the office almost every day, especially right now. But it's a lot of fun and I enjoy it. Catch myself saying I'm going home to see my family. So Jonesboro is still very much home, but it's great. I like it out there. I actually wound up in the firm that I work at through Logan Uxa, who I play with here at Arkansas State. One of his best childhood friends from St. Louis is my colleague. And that's kind of how I wound up in there. I was, you know, networking through my network and we connected the dots and it's been a great fit. I'm very lucky to work where I work and Los Angeles is great. It's something, but it's great.
You got a Dodgers-Yankees World Series prediction? Are you a Dodger fan now?
I don't know. I tell people I'm a baseball fan, right? Because I still know some guys that are playing that I watch. You know, I played with Lindor a couple of seasons. There's some guys that I played with when I played in the Fall League that are still around on other teams. And so I'm a baseball fan, honestly. I'll watch anybody that's playing on TV right now. A prediction? I don't know. The Yankees have better starters, but I think their bullpen now has taken a little bit of a lick the last couple of days in Cleveland. The lineups are both very good. I think the Yankees have a little bit more balance with, you know, left and right hitters. I don't know. It's a heavyweight fight, right? I mean, this is not a small market World Series.
No.
You know, you probably got a small percentage of the U.S. GDP playing in this in this World Series. So it'll be really fun to watch.
All right, a couple I want to ask you before we let you go, because, I mean, you go back to your initial recruitment was with another staff, but then you come in and you play at the start of Coach Raffo's time here, and you mentioned, you know, he pops up again in a conversation during an off season and he kind of helped you get to that crossroads. And I know you come and make a week of it, so you'll see him this week leading into Friday, and he'll be there Friday as well. I think it's the plan. So talk about that relationship.
He's an amazing person. He's a phenomenal coach. I was very lucky to be there with him. And he has been a mentor to me, you know, as a person. I'm very lucky to have him as somebody I can call, text, grab some lunch with. And I commend him on the record and the time spent at ASU. He did great. I really enjoyed following along when I wasn't there. You know, he's very consistent, I think, in a lot of ways in the way he approached the game, which is something that I really admired and tried to adopt into my game. You know, that this was it's a job. And it was a job the first day showed up on campus, you know, playing for him. And I took it very seriously. And he taught us how to, you know, taught me a lot of things, but that I now still practice in my, you know, life as a non-athlete, you know, how to treat folks the right way, how to go about your business the right way. And I really, really appreciated that from him. And it was a lot of fun to play with him, play for him. And it's been great, just as much fun to, you know, get to know him off the field and now in his non-coaching era.
Did you get to tell him about this Hall of Honor thing, or do you already know?
I think he already knew. I mean, you know, he's probably
I bet Todd told him.
He knew, I think.
he acted like he didn't.
No, I just said, hey, I would love to have you there and sitting with me and my family at the induction ceremony. And I'm very glad and appreciative of him and his wife, Paula, joining us this week. So that'll be exciting. I'm really looking forward to it.
All right. You are a professional pitcher now in real estate on the West Coast. So what's your handicap? Because I know it's low.
Oh, no. I could always be lower, like a 10. I'd love to be a single digit and a lower digit than that, but I play good enough to network. That's where I'm at right now. I'm good at the network scrambling.
That's what
things.
You need to be.
Yeah. I make a putt or two, maybe a couple of drives out there, some jokes in between those, and then I'm good.
Well, buddy, it is great to see you. Awesome to have you in studio. Can't wait to see you go into the Hall of Honor coming up on Friday night. Going to be a special night. Do you have your speech ready yet? Or
I've turned maybe two drafts of it, so I'm getting there. I'm preparing. I heard JD was a little surprised that he had to do it, which was funny. But no, I'm excited to do it. I'm really looking forward to it. And again, you'll hear this word a lot this week and on Friday. I'm honored to get to go in and be amongst some of the guys that I grew up watching, you know, as a local Jonesboro fan of ASU sports. So I'm really looking forward to it.
That's Jacob Lee joining us here on the Second to None podcast. We've got more to come right after this.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Red Wolf fans, this is Demario Davis, proud Red Wolf and linebacker for the New Orleans Saints. And I'm asking you to help out our current A-State student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our players by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at impactclub.com. Thank you, and Wolves up.
And we welcome you back to the Second to None podcast, presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Great weekend for the football team. They were in Hattiesburg, able to go in there and defeat Southern Miss. First victory in Hattiesburg in their last five tries. It had been since 1977, last time we won there.
I don't remember that one.
No, I wasn't around, and you were just.
I was around. I'm probably 6 months old. So,
yeah, I mean, a lot of good things to take out of this game. First road win of the season. Finally, saw that breakout performance from the offense that we had been waiting for, and we had talked about it all week leading up, and even before kickoff. Grizz and I are talking about it on the broadcast. You got all this talent. We expected it coming into the season, the offense putting up a whole lot of points, and you just felt it coming because the offense had been moving the ball even in the couple of games before. I know we scored 18 points against South Alabama in that win, and then 9 points the week before against Texas State. But we were moving the ball. Yeah. We just weren't finishing drives, and that changed in a big way in this game. And right out of the gate, to see the offense score, not just score, but score touchdowns on the first three drives was extremely encouraging. And what a catch by Adam Jones in the back of the end zone to wrap up that first drive.
I guess it's a good thing he caught it because he wasn't getting a flag, which is amazing to me. But I guess it didn't matter. I'll give the official, once he saw it catch it, he was too amazed to throw the obvious pass interference flag.
Then on the second drive, it was just a one-play drive. And Grizz and I were sitting in Coach Jones' office on Thursday, and he said, look, we're going to try to get Malik Hornsby more involved the rest of the way. And, man, did they. They give it to him on the sweep. He takes it 73 yards to the house. The third drive, Jaquez Cross able to score on a 10-yard touchdown catch. He was ruled down at the one, but that call was later overturned. In the second half, he'd add a rushing touchdown on top of that, so a receiving touchdown and a rushing touchdown for Jaquez, and he finished with 189 all-purpose yards. And look, this offense, and we saw it the second half of last season, when Jaquez is going, this team is a whole lot better.
Everything to the plan. I mean, in that first half, the start, you mentioned the big day for Jaquez, but you know, probably 200 yards of offense in the first quarter right there about, and then to ice it then, and not to get ahead, but the day Jaquez had is such kind of a natural segue to then going with the Thunder portion of Thunder and Lightning to put it away in the fourth quarter.
Really neat to see. I mean, we'll go ahead and talk about it here. Just the way the offense closed out the game. We got the football with 9:57 to go, up a couple of scores. Look, I mean, Southern Miss still has time to come back if they can get the ball back. But they didn't get the ball back until there were 50 seconds left. It was a 17-play, 9-minute, and 7-second drive that ended with a field goal. And by the way, Kloon Van Andel's hit his last 10 field goals now, which is the fourth longest streak in school history. But yeah, we went 3 of 14 on third down the other day, but we were 4 for 4 on fourth down, and it sure helps when you got Zach Wallace running the football.
Yeah, it was almost like, I mean, we had Jacob Lee in here, and Zach was the closer. He came in and just said, you know, you guys aren't getting this football back. And that was cool. It was cool to see it happen in both ways. I mean, I don't even know if Mark Taylor could find how many times a team have a one-play drive and a 9-minute drive in the same game.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I would like to know how many times that's happened. One more note from the offense. Great to see Corey Rucker in the end zone again. He had a 13-yard touchdown catch. That was a great grab as well. And that's his 19th career touchdown catch, which ties him for third all time with Kirk Merritt's in career touchdown receptions. Now, we're up 28-21 at half. The offense is clicking, but the defense really hasn't performed the way we expected them to. And Coach Jones even talked about it during his halftime interview with us. He said, we've got to address some things defensively, need to get off to a good start. And man, did they ever. Yeah. I mean, the defense was fantastic. In the final 30 minutes, they forced an opening 3-and-out in the third quarter, which was important because they had closed to within 7, and Southern Miss got the football first in that second half. So it kind of took away some momentum there, but the job by the defensive front was just phenomenal because they were bringing pressure all night long, especially in that second half, finished with 6 sacks, 11 TFLs, which were the most since 2021. Forced 3 takeaways. All 3 takeaways came in the second half, and a big reason for that was the play of Jaden Jones, the SMU transfer at defensive end. He was named Sun Belt Conference Defensive Player of the Week for his efforts. I would have been shocked if he didn't get it because he finished with 8 tackles, 3 TFLs, a couple of sacks, a forced fumble, and an amazing interception. Just a little pitch. Jaden just picks it out of the air, and we were about to be furious because they initially ruled that kind of like a tie ball.
Possession, yeah.
And it's like baseball. The tie goes to the runner, or in this case, the tie goes to the offense. But it didn't make any sense because Jaden had the ball initially. He ran it forward 5 yards. Then the Southern Miss player put his hands on it kind of at the end.
I could listen. I almost can see it live speed. You're down there. Like, there's no way you think the play that just got made. If you're, you know, I mean, there's no way you think this big lineman just intercepted that pitch. So I can almost kind of see the officials having to go sort that thing out and have another look at it because we could all see it and we had the benefit of replay to see that there was never a point of simultaneous possession because once he caught it, right possession changed. He was the offense then. And so I felt confident that one would get sorted out. Yeah, and had it not, it would have been egregious. But, yeah, what a play. You won't see many like that. And, yeah, what a day. And good to see him get a well-deserved honor.
Red Wolves now 4-3 overall. They're 2-1 in Sunbelt Conference play. It's the best start to conference play since 2017. We'll talk about what else is happening in the world of A-State athletics when we wrap things up on the Second to None podcast right after this.
At First National Bank, our mortgage lending team knows what it takes to make a home and a superior home loan process. Simple, proven, and reliable service with competitive rates at a bank that already feels like home. Since 1889, that's been the First National Bank way, because for our people, this is home. Apply online at fnbank.net/mortgage. From our family to yours, welcome home. First National Bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Coach Brian Hodson, and I'm asking you to help our A-State student-athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our student-athletes by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T Club.com. Your support makes a real difference in the lives of our student athletes. Wolves up.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and by Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. Men's basketball, your first chance to see them in person coming up Saturday morning as part of a big weekend on campus. 11 a.m. is the time for the exhibition against Trevecca Nazarene, and super secret scrimmage held over the weekend. Yeah, if they had played that game, I would have thought the Red Wolves may have gone on the road and won by 5 points against a really good opponent.
Yeah, picked third in their league, I think, that opponent. And listen, we'll talk more about it at the end here, kind of the weekend. Yeah, it is part of a big weekend, and obviously this is a key part of it. A lot of people excited. This is no secret, no super secrets here. The game's at 11 o'clock, and all are welcome. We'll talk more about it in just a minute.
Women's golf finishing 7th out of 17 teams last week at the Lady Red Wolves Classic, which was played at Sage Meadows. The women's golf team currently competing at the Diamante Intercollegiate. That's at Hot Springs Village. Meanwhile, volleyball, they were on the road taking on the preseason league favorite, Texas State. They got swept on Friday, but then on Saturday, Texas State comes out, they win the first set again. Yeah. And you're thinking, man, what's going on here? But the next three sets were not just won, but completely dominated by the Red Wolves. 25-17, 25-15, and 25-14 in favor of A-State. They come back and win in four sets and earn the split on the road against a really, really good Texas State team. So with that, A-State volleyball's sitting at 16-4 now, and they're 6-2 in conference, and they're tied for first in the Western Division with South Alabama. And now they return home coming up Thursday at 6 and Friday at 4, a couple of big home matches against Troy.
Make sure everybody knows those times, because obviously there was a stretch of time where both those matches were at 6. But the Friday match is at 4 o'clock, and Thursday night at 6. Yeah, undefeated at home, and hopefully a big crowd will come out this weekend and keep it that way. Keep us atop the West Division.
Soccer team played a couple of matches this past week. They finished in a scoreless tie last Thursday against the Cajuns. And then they were on the road Sunday playing that makeup match at Appalachian State. Ended up dropping that one 2-1. Soccer team now 3-5-5 on the season. And I got a couple of more matches this week at James Madison Wednesday at 6. And then Senior Day on Sunday. Last chance to see the soccer team at home Sunday at 1 against Old Dominion.
People listening to this may not have the same reaction because they'll know it probably by the time I say it. But with breaking A-State sports news, literally while we're sitting here recording this podcast.
Okay.
You mentioned A-State playing in the Diamante Intercollegiate. In round two, Ashley Kim, who, by the way, if you've not paid attention, she's threatening to break some records that currently have the name Olivia Schmidt on them.
I didn't know that was possible.
Yeah. Well, she did something today on the old par 5 11th, playing 531 yards. She had herself an albatross. She made a 2.
Wow. Double eagle.
Yes. How about that?
Well,
that's
more. Red Wolves
that's a lot more rare than a Hoatland one.
Meanwhile, the bowling team finished third at the Destination Tournament in Orlando this past weekend. They're now 21-5 through their first two tournaments. Tennis team was supposed to host the Scarlet and Black Open this weekend, but that's been canceled.
Yeah, they had some teams say, "Oh, we're not coming."
What's up with that?
I don't know.
Well, they're going to wrap up the fall schedule now, November 1st and 2nd, when they head to the Liberty Invite in Lynchburg, Virginia. And I do want to mention cross country. They had a good performance in College Station over the weekend at the Arturo Barrios Invitational. The men finished 9th out of 38 teams. Jacob Pyatt finishing 9th out of 376 participants in that race. He's now turned in back-to-back top 10 finishes. And the women finished 19th out of 41 teams in that event. Cross country now getting ready for the Sun Belt Championships, which will be held Friday, November 1st in Foley, Alabama. Which takes us to football.
Yeah.
Huge game coming up this weekend, taking on the two-time defending champions from Troy. I know the Trojans not having the kind of season they've been having the last couple of years, but I consider this a rivalry. And, I mean, some of my favorite games that I've ever called at Arkansas State have been A-State and Troy games. There's been a lot of great ones. The two winningest programs in Sun Belt Conference history. Yep. And a lot of championships between them. I always look forward to when the Red Wolves play the Trojans. We talk about all the stuff surrounding the game this weekend, but look, this is the main event coming up Saturday at 6 o'clock, and we need a huge crowd there.
We do, because look, it matters, and I don't really care what Troy's record is, because you know they've got talent, and they underwent a coaching change in the offseason. Sometimes those things take time. You know they got dudes. That's all you got to worry about. I couldn't care less what their record is. I really couldn't even tell you what their record is, because I know it's Troy, and I know they got good players, and I'm all for kicking them while they're down, if that's what you think the situation is. But, you know, it matters. I mean, you look. It was an interesting weekend of results around the Sun Belt Conference, interesting weekend in the West Division.
Mm-hmm.
You got to just stack up wins here. Look, it's just what this league is going to do. Everybody's going to beat up on everybody, so you got to see who can – come out taking the fewest punches at the end, and a big part of that's taking care of home starting Saturday.
Anything else we need to
mention before
we get out of here?
I'll talk about, first of all, a ticket to that football game is really valuable. You know, if you got a ticket to the football game Saturday, that'll get you into the football game, obviously. But having it, you know, on your phone, or if you still got the paper tickets, God bless you. But either way, if you've got your ticket to the football game Saturday, that'll get you into both volleyball matches this weekend, and it would get you into the men's basketball exhibition game Saturday.
Wow.
A football ticket will get you into all that. It is a super ticket. If not, now, specifically to men's basketball, if you've got season tickets, that ticket to the exhibition game's in your account. Now, I want everybody to know this. The seating is going to be open, with the exception of the courtside seats Saturday. But you've got a ticket to the games. But if for some reason you don't have a ticket to the basketball game, and you don't have a ticket to the football game, then you can get a ticket to the basketball game for $10. It will be open seating with the exception of the courtside seats. The tickets, your mobile tickets should already be in your account if you got them. And if you're a season ticket holder, that included the ticket to the game Saturday against Trevecca. So check that out. And then Sunday is a senior day for soccer at 1 o'clock. So hopefully some folks check that bunch out too and prod them along to a win. They're still playing phenomenal defense, just trying to find an extra one or two somewhere to get in the net.
Really, really enjoyed our visit with Jacob Lee. It was great to have him in. I can't wait for the Hall of Honor, always one of my favorite events. We'll see some great inductees going in on Friday night. Always appreciate you listening. For Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great week, everybody.